live. It's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Cause every minute, every hour, you'll be shaken by the strange and mighty power.
We're going to talk NBA basketball here today on Drive Time Sports as we are gearing up for the draft, which is now a two-day thing in the NBA. Free agency, that's one of my favorite aspects of the summer, and roster construction. I can never get enough of this talk. Plus some coaching news that has broke over the last 4 or 5 days in the NBA. We're going to be joined right now over the phone once again by James Holis. He is our Drive Time Sports NBA analyst. James, it's great you pick on. And now it's still celebration time, I know, for you being a Celtics guy, but now it's the offseason and teams are beginning to mold already for that 2024-25 campaign.
Yeah, man. It's hard for me to talk from way up here on top of cloud nine, but I can talk some NBA basketball talk as long as we start and end it with the Boston Celtics are the 2023-2024 NBA champs.
They are, and they're not going anywhere, right? So as far as roster construction is concerned, and you and I briefly had this talk during the last break, in the NBA with this realm and free agency, I always look at a championship window for a team being about 3 to 4 years. That's the way I always view it when we're talking NBA basketball, especially with the length of contracts today, 3 to 4 years. Boston, to me, is at the very beginning of that window, and they already have a championship. And when you take a look at the top seven, top eight players, they're not going anywhere. Like, this is now, for the next 5 years, I believe the Celtics have set the pace for the NBA. And as a fan, that's got to be a great feeling.
It is. Now, it made me kind of think of the Warriors, right, how they had their core locked up at so young. They're even younger than the Celtics core, right, as far as Tatum, Brown, and Kristaps maybe. Now, the big difference, and I'm a realist, right, we all know that the new second apron thing is going to be kicking in here soon. If people don't know what that means that once the salary of your team gets to be a certain amount, it's very punitive and it's very restrictive as far as what you can do with the roster. And even with the new TV deal coming and the increase in the salary cap, that roster, I mean, it's going to be tough because Boston has two max guys and then another $30 million guy, and then, you know, Drew's 25 or whatever, and we know that Derek White's going to be. So it's going to be really tough for Boston here probably. And even if they keep that, you know, the core five or six guys together, it's going to be really hard around the edges. And if they don't win 1 or 2 years in a row, it's going to be tough for ownership to stomach the punitive measures that the NBA salary cap has been put in place. So the optimists want to say 5, 6 years. I really know it's probably more if they don't win next year, like 3 years maybe. So, but it is what it is. We're going to ride till the wheels fall off.
Well, it has been hard in the NBA as of late to repeat. We've got about 6 years now. The last six champions have been different. Right, so it is hard to repeat. But now let's start looking at some of the news and notes that's coming out of the NBA. First time I've had you on the show since the Lakers made it official and hiring J.J. Redick as their head coach. And of the Cleveland Cavaliers, they have a new head coach as well. So we have one team ahead of the draft that does not have a guy patrolling the sidelines. We'll start with the Lakers. To me, James, this right here is a very high ceiling, very low floor. That's the way I view J.J. Redick. I can see this going one of two ways. You know, I think there are other coaching candidates out there that maybe are more qualified. To me, their ceiling not as high. And I think a lot of the reason why the ceiling isn't as high is because we don't know what we're going to get out of J.J. Redick. I would have liked to have seen him go the route of the front office first. I think we've seen that mold. Steve Kerr fits that mold, right? I think we've seen success from those former players who have seen it done in the front office. They transition to the bench. But still, my assessment of the J.J. Redick hire, high ceiling, low floor.
Totally agree, and it's all also especially magnified in a market like Los Angeles, right? We know that the Lakers set a very high bar. It's pretty much championship or bust, and if they don't contend this year and make a really deep run, no matter who is the coach, there's going to be questions asked, right? We know that. We know that no matter the bloom will be off the rose very quickly if things – it could be injuries, it could be whatever. It doesn't matter. Winning is the only option if you as a Laker fan and Laker franchise. So, very high ceiling. Obviously, if they make some roster moves and they bolster LeBron and Anthony Davis and they make a deep run next year. But we also understand a deep run doesn't matter, right? Like, if they could be out, six games in the Western Conference Finals, no one will be satisfied with that, and the pressure will be up immensely on J.J. Redick.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You know, I look at the idea of this being a four-year deal. I wish it would have been a little bit of a longer-term deal. You know, maybe that's something that will just work its way out. I don't know. But that also tells me that this was kind of a move put in to maybe appease LeBron. I know the media doesn't want to spin it that way. Clutch Sports doesn't want to spun that way. But to me, the idea that J.J. Redick's going to be LeBron's last coach on a four-year deal, to me, that says something. And I also, you know, I understand that when you go back and you look at this guy's resume, there's nothing there. I mean, we'll talk about Kenny Atkinson in a moment. This is a guy that's earned his stripes going back to the 80s, right? J.J. Redick doesn't necessarily have that. But if you're looking to build off of the core that Rob Pelinka re-upped last year, I'm talking about Rui. I'm talking about, you know, Austin Reeves. We've already seen his agent come out and speak on this. 4 years, not a lot of time in the NBA. It's really not.
It's not, but then again, we know, like, let's be real. J.J. gets a longer leash once, if LeBron retires in the next year or two, right? Mm-hmm. And we know it's coming. Like, LeBron, the age that he seems, does he have 4 years left? You know what I mean? Like, that's a long time in the NBA. It's a short time in the NBA, but it's a long time for a guy who's almost 40 as far as a player, you know? So if LeBron decides to hang it up, you know, in the next 2-3 years, all of a sudden you kind of get a reset on J.J. because all expectations change, right? So it's just uncharted territory for everybody involved. A player of LeBron playing as long as he has, at the level he still does, a team like the Lakers with two max big-name guys who haven't been quite good enough to lift all for the tide to lift all boats, that roster move to make, it's going to be tough.
Outside of the Lakers, we move over to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they have their guy in Kenny Atkinson. And again, I'm going to go back to what I just said a moment ago. If you take a look at the credentials of, we'll say, a guy like J.J. Redick in comparison to a guy like Kenny Atkinson, it's night and day difference. I, for one, am happy that Kenny's going to get another go with this. When you go back and you look at his tenure with Brooklyn, there's not a single coach in the league that would have had an opportunity to succeed with that particular situation. He's also worked his way back up, 3 years in the Golden State Warriors organization the last 3 years. I believe he was an assistant for the Clippers, too, before that, if I'm not mistaken. This is a guy that's earned his stripes, James, and I'm happy to see him walk into a situation with a team that is going to be competitive, but it's also a team that has a lot of question marks in the offseason as well.
Yeah, and he's actually, you know, he did no wrong there in Brooklyn. He actually overachieved. He was a victim of the bright lights of bringing in two megastars who were a little bit entitled. It sucks. It does suck. And it's really good for him, right? I think it's a great situation for him because we know that the Cavs, obviously, in a league, in the Eastern Conference with the Celtics and the Bucks, and who else? Who's another contender? Well, however, we know no one's talking about the Cavs right now, so they're under the radar a little bit. If they can re-sign Donovan Mitchell, and they're going to be competitive, the pressure is all off. They're going to give him the tools. I think he's a really good coach. So I think it's funny, in a vacuum, if you ask a coach, hey, which job would you probably prefer as far as for the pressure and just like, sure. Look, the Lakers is the Rolls Royce of the job, but we all know Rolls Royce is super expensive to keep up, right? And the insurance is out of this world. There's certain downfalls for having a Rolls Royce. Sometimes you want a really nice Camry. Sometimes you want it's tough. It's a great situation for Kenny. And like you said, man, experience-wise, it's funny how things work because he'd probably be the Lakers' better choice. But the Lakers don't play like that. They want to go for the big swing.
Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. Again, the other team looking for a job, looking for a head coach for that job would be the Detroit Pistons after getting rid of Monty Williams. You know, I go back, we could piggyback off of what we were just talking about with Kenny Atkinson a moment ago, James. No coach is going to be put in a position to succeed with Detroit. They're going to get a 3-4 year deal. They will not live for the full 3-4 years in that position. The writing's on the wall. We see this time and time again. The turnover for coaches in the NBA, it's outstanding. Whoever takes that job will be done within the next 2-3 years. I'm telling you right now, that to me is just a lame duck job from the very beginning. And the only thing you can hope for is that someone takes that job prematurely who wasn't ready for it. You know what I mean?
Well, I will say there is another option, just like the Thunder. Sure, that Thunder were younger and probably had much better talent all over the place, but the point is the coach came in and you saw immediate dividend. They played, even if the results weren't there, the process was amazing. So let's say you get a new coach that comes in Detroit and he really kind of installs a modern, sophisticated system, and the guys are shooting threes, and you see the defense improve. Like, that's – then you say, okay, we got a coach in here, like, what's OKC? They need to get their Thunder coach, right? A young, forward-thinking, a coach that's obviously a tactician, and you say, hey, he's going to lay down the framework. Let him grow with our young stars. Let's see if he can make Cade. If all of a sudden Cade Cunningham, you squint and you see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander light. You know what I mean? So there is an option. There's a way there that they come up with a creative name and bring in someone who, not gonna cost you an arm and a leg because it's maybe an unproven commodity. But you hit with that and you're golden.
That's a fair point, especially, as you said, forward-thinking coaches. And that is the direction I think the league is going. We always get to a point to where retreads we don't see retreads, right? We get a fresh wave of coaches in, and then those coaches become retreads 5-10 years down the road. I feel like we're kind of hitting that right now. I know Atkinson is a retread, but he had such a short stint in Brooklyn. It's not really the same thing. I think we're going into that new era, man, where we're going to see a lot of first-year head coaches.
I agree. I think the difference with Atkinson is that he had a good track record. He was that kind of a Euro, like those Nets teams overachieved with him, right? We would say that he made chicken salad out of chicken something else, and he did a good job. So he was almost, even though he's a young coach, but he was, you know, he showed a little innovation. He showed to be a great players coach. That's great. So, but yeah, I'm right there with you. I think Doc Rivers, let's talk about the Bucks, was probably the wrong idea. I think their front office and their management wasn't forward-thinking enough. And bringing in a retread like Doc, I don't think that's going to best take advantage of Giannis and a guy like Dame. I think that was probably a bad choice. It felt safe, a comfort choice, but that was a bad choice. So I'm with you. I think a blessing in disguise for the Boston Celtics, Joe Mazzulla, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dropped in his lap, but look at him. He's very modern. He said he's all about the math with him. He's very analytics driven, but he's proven himself now to be a coach that can make adjustments. So that was a stroke of good luck, champion in his second year. So yeah, man, there's no downside to be the Detroit coach right now because either you get a bag and you get experience and you might move on a few years. Or you make a mark and you say, boom, I'm gonna make this job my own for the next decade.
Again, James Holish joining us right now. James, I do want to throw a couple of contract extensions that have been thrown out there. We'll start with Scotty Barnes. 5-year extension worth $270 million. He is the highest paid player in Toronto Raptors franchise history. A lot of people would look at that and say, man, that's absolutely wild. Look, he's the current highest paid Raptor in franchise history, only until the next highest paid Raptor in franchise history, right? The market dictates this. $270 million over 5 years for Scotty Barnes. Your thoughts?
I mean, it is what it is. It sounds like monopoly money. We know with the, like I said, the new salary cap, the new TV deal, the money's probably going to spike here a little bit. And, I mean, it's the going rate. He's a very good young player. I think he's only 22. He shows a lot of upside. He's huge, super versatile. He's still basically a lump of raw clay, and he's been very productive. And the Raptors have nowhere else to go right now, right? They just traded Pascal. They traded OG. All those guys from the championship team are gone right now. So they're just he is basically luck of the draw. He got drafted here. He produced enough. And they're like, well, we gotta start somewhere. We got to lay a foundation somewhere. So if he lives up, even if he doesn't become a superstar, which I don't think he will, if he's a multiple-time All-Star, hey, look with the money that Jalen just got. Jalen just won a championship. Now he's being the best player on his team, even though he's the highest player. This is what it is. So, yeah, in a couple of years, we won't even blink at the contract that Barnes has. But right now, it sounds like an awful lot of money for an unproven commodity.
Sounds like an awful lot of money for an unproven commodity, but it also makes sense as to why Toronto now moved on from Pascal Siakam. If you think a franchise is unaware of what the market is going to hold for a certain player, it's completely asinine. It doesn't matter the way that Siakam performed in Indiana. Toronto knew what kind of a player he was when they dealt him. Bottom line is, they weren't going to pay him 4 years, $190 mil. They just simply weren't going to do it. He wraps up that deal with Indiana, so good for him.
Oh, yeah. All about timelines and where you are as a franchise, right? Pascal is, what, 28? You know, almost 29, I think, 27, 28, 29. This Raptors team is about to start crawling, and they're just teething, and Pascal is definitely, hitting middle school. So it was just a bad fit. And that's all, right? This is every franchise in this building process has a timeline, and he didn't fit the timeline. So good for it worked out best for both teams, I think, right? The Pacers are going to give are giving Pascal his money. He's got a nice fat contract extension. I think it's $190 million. He's just what they need, 20 to 25 points. Plays great with Tyrese Halliburton. Not a bad defender. Like, this is the going rate. So this is one of those rare trades I think that worked out best for both teams.
Malik Monk gets a deal, 4 years, $78 million with Sacramento. I was not a huge fan of this. You?
I am, because, again, Sacramento's one of those teams. They're not upper echelon contender, but they do have two all-stars. You know, they got to stay competitive. Malik Monk has been looking for a home for years. He's been kind of a journeyman a little bit, right? But he's been really good. And a great secondary ball handler with De'Aaron Fox. Explosive scorer, one of the only guys on the team besides Fox that can really get his own shot. And he's great for them. So I like it. We're talking 470-something. So, that's not bad at all. What, 17 a year or something?
17
a year. 18 million a year?
Yeah, I guess 17 million a year with where we're going with the cap. Essentially, he's what, third, maybe fourth best player on the team, right? So I guess that falls right in line with it. I guess when you put it in terms like that, yeah, that's market value.
That's not bad at all, man. That's like Marcus Smart money, I think. And that's, you know, for a guy who's going to start and give you 18 to 25, and on a good night can give you 40, and is not scared at the moment. I mean, it is what it is. Sacramento wants to stay relevant. That's the best. That's what you do. You pay your guys.
James, I know with the draft coming up, you're not a huge draft guy, but is there a specific rookie that maybe has caught your eye, someone out there that you kind of like, that you're looking forward to seeing where he goes? Have you paid attention in that realm at all?
I think next time we talk, I'll have some more info, because I have not. I've seen a little highlights. I've seen that Shepherd kid from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I've just seen some clips. I haven't done any kind of like any clip work, any watching or anything, because I'm too happy my team just won a championship, and I'm too busy collecting receipts and retweeting bad takes. So next time we talk, I'll have better info about the newly drafted guys by the time we talk.
Yeah, well, we can end with this. Bronny James, where does he go?
I have no idea, man. And honestly, I've watched some of the highlights. If his name was Bronny Washington, he's not getting drafted.
No, not at all.
I have no problem with nepotism, right? Hey, make your money, young man. Get it, and maybe he does hit the league and have some kind of maybe, I don't know, Avery Bradley-like kind of career. Maybe he actually improves, and who knows? We have no idea. I don't see it as anything right now. So I could see a team, you know, and someone who's picking in the 50s taking a flyer on him. I could see the Lakers making a move to get a late pick so they can bring him in, because we know he wants to play with LeBron. I could see a team like the Cavs doing that. Hopefully LeBron comes back in a couple of years. I don't know. It's a non-story, and if he wasn't LeBron's kid, we wouldn't be talking about him.
It's kind of odd to me. I thought that by this point in time he would no longer be in the draft pool. But here we go, and I agree with you 100%. I think he ends up going to L.A., and maybe financially it's such a low-risk deal here, right? Because we see teams buy second-round draft picks all the time. So if you're hovering around that 40, 45, 50 mark, you're going to be able to buy a second-round pick for next to nothing.
And who knows? Maybe he goes undrafted, and then he signs somewhere. You know, he's a training camp add-on, and we see him in summer league, and he finally latches on for a G League team. You know, plenty of options. Best luck to him. I wish him nothing but the best. But the size, he's a decent athlete. You know, I got nothing on him.
Well, listen, these are the types of stories that I typically try to stay away from here on the show, right? Because we have things that are sensationalized for clicks. That's one of the reasons I love getting you here on the show. We don't sensationalize anything. We just talk about the meat and bones of the NBA. That's what we do whenever we have you on. But this is a story that is clouding the NBA draft. And to me, that is kind of unfortunate. I know it's not a great draft class, and maybe that has something to do with it. But there are some kids out there that can play some basketball that are going to be important pieces to a certain team. Yet it is the Bronny talk that's kind of overshadowing everything with the draft.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some kids out there who are going to be really motivated by that. They're going to go at him super hard and work out. If he gets on a summer league team, people can go at him. And this is the crucible for him, right? It's sink or swim. You got to play the game. So say what you want. It's going to be an interesting side story, right? A big part of the offseason in the NBA is about the drama and the other stories, and this is one of them. So it's what makes the NBA great.
James Holis again taking out the time to join us. James, before I let you go ahead and talk about where we can find more of your work. I know you do a pod from time to time, but now we're kind of in the dog days of summer.
Yeah, Casual Diehards, me and my boy Jesse and my homegirl Ace, we do a pod. I just did one gloating about the Celtics, of course. You can find it, Casual Diehards, on all streaming platforms and on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, at Snotty Drippin'. Right now, it's like you said, it's the dog days of season. I just kind of stream of consciousness, tweet stuff and retweet stuff and just hang out. So come over and hang out.
James, always a pleasure to get you on. We'll do it again next week. Recap the NBA draft.
You're the man. Thank you.
We've got to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.